I mean, if I don't laugh, I will cry. Yeah, it definitely would be much hipper to be square with our new laundry room. You can even tell it's not square by the way the tile is laid. We were able to hide some of the uneven tile lines with the washer and dryer, and then we have a small stand-up freezer, but it's a mess. And we have our final inspections coming Tuesday and Wednesday. One is for electrical and plumbing. The other is for the actual structure of the building. That's the same guy, by the way, who is supposed to be taking care of the neighbor and his obnoxious intrusive light, which is still shining. So the notice went out last week. At the very latest, the neighbors would have received it Friday. Now, they were gone for the weekend. This is what they do, Pete. They leave their obnoxious, bright, white light that shines like the moon on the entire backyard and back of our house. They leave it on all weekend. So they go away every weekend now, and they leave. I dare say this is why. They started going away on weekends. This is probably why. Because they don't want it to look like they're gone. And so not only do they have every light inside the house on, they've got all these lights outside the house as well. They leave on all weekend.
Oh, I like lights, but they're sick.
No, it's awful. It's disgusting, and it's so frustrating. And if they were gone Friday when the mail was delivered, which is a possibility, they would have received it Sunday. Okay, light still shined Sunday night into Monday. And then Monday night, it wasn't even night. It was 4:30 in the afternoon when the light came on because of the time change and the fact that we're gearing up for the darkest month of the year. Yeah, it goes on at about 4:30 in the afternoon, and it doesn't go off until after 7 o'clock in the morning. That's how long that ridiculous bleeping light is on. So we're wondering how long the town is going to give the dude until it's a second notice. Or it's a threat of a fine, because the first notice, how long do you get to ignore it before you turn the light off?
Well, first notice, you probably get 30 days.
Oh my gosh.
That'd be my guess. In case you mail, you know, like it's kind of like a ticket. I feel like when you get a ticket, you have 30 days from that point to pay the ticket. So I would say 30 days.
So depressing. So depressing. It is unbelievable that this is still happening. It's been 2 months. The town took 3 weeks before their planning meeting and then sending out the notice, which I know it's a small town, so things move relatively slowly. They probably just have one planning board per month or one planning board meeting per month. But yeah, if they give them 30 days, we're talking about getting close to Christmas and the light still being on.
Well, you're probably already into January because of the holidays, so I would say January.
Well, aren't you the bearer of good news?
No,
thank you.
What we talked about last week, bad news first, and then you can build up
good news. There's no good news here at all.
Well, the good news is once he gets the notice, then you start moving.
The good news is, I don't know what the good news is. The good news is I might be able to put Christmas lights up and at some point, maybe, just maybe compete with the crazy bright white light on the back of our house.
You should hang Christmas lights around that light. And maybe it'd be less than the blow.
You don't understand how bright this light is. It's a security light, and it's bright white. And I'm not joking. It shines as bright as the moon.
Oh, it's when cars.
But it's closer.
When cars have that light, oh, it's the worst.
Yeah, it's hideous.
Yeah.
So that has not changed. People ask me all the time, is the neighbor's light still on? Well, yes, it is. It's still on. The neighbors don't care. We're pretty confident that the neighbor probably took the notice, and if he hasn't already, is going to march up to the town and try to complain about how he has a right to do whatever he wants with his property and with his light. Now, I know the town inspector, that's only going to make him dig in his heels more. I mean, he's a code guy. We talked about this. Joe's a code guy. He's not a feelings guy. He's a code guy. He doesn't need our sob story. He just needs to know the light violates code. So we're thankful for that, because we were worried that we'd have to appeal to him and convince him. Though he did tell my husband that he showed up, he saw the light, and he recognized that it's obnoxious. So at least there's that. He's seen the light. But man, if you're talking about a month before anything could possibly be done as a follow-up, that sucks.
I'm just using a hypothesis on this. It's just how tickets work and whatnot. Probably get a month to just get the notice, read the notice, respond.
Oh,
It might be sooner.
Stake right through my heart.
If he responds, if he marches up there when he gets back home next week, you know, that
maybe,
could be that.
Maybe they'll fight it out. And he'll get, what if he loses his temper again and somehow accosts the building inspector or the department dude and then gets arrested and thrown in jail for assault? That'd be amazing.
Then you'll have new neighbors.
That would be amazing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I can't believe I'm wishing incarceration on anyone, but...
that's what we got to.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, Lord. Please forgive me. At A-Law Radio to find me online. Also on our Facebook page. Coming up, we'll give you the candidates for TD of the week. So that was the bad news, Pete. Can we talk about a little good news?
Sure.
Yeah? You ready for some good news?
Yes.
Because this will put a smile on my face, even though right now I'm extremely frustrated about the light. And every single night when I get ready for work and this freaking light is shining in the back of the spare room where I get ready because my husband's sleeping, the skylight in the bathroom, it's not the moon. I can tell it's not the moon, but it's the light. My nieces were visiting us this weekend and I asked them, do you need a blanket over the window? Cause it's pretty light out. And they were very sweet. Like, oh, that's awful, but no, we'll be okay.
Did they notice it before you even said anything or no?
Well, they knew about it because I told the family and sent them photos. So they couldn't wait to see the light, actually. They were pretty excited about the light and how obnoxious it was. We actually have family coming for all of Thanksgiving week. So my new brother and sister-in-law will be flying into New Jersey on Saturday evening. I'm debating whether or not to bring up the light and to tell them because maybe they won't notice. And if they don't notice, then maybe they won't fixate on it. Because once you know it's there, it's impossible to ignore.
I wouldn't tell them. I would see what the reaction is.
Okay, so
case study.
All of that is the bad news, but okay. I'm trying to use the recommended way to break news. I think about 70% of you told me that you go bad news first. So the bad news is that the neighbor has not turned off the light and seemingly doesn't give a you know what about whether or not the neighbors are disturbed. But the good news is the town is on it. The clock is ticking, as Pete has pointed out, so I'll be grateful for that. There's more good news, though. I have been taking steps, which I've shared here on the show, to adopt a new dog. And on Monday, I had a conversation about a dog I think is the right fit. And the great news is the rescue organization loves my application. I told you it's like filling out an application to adopt a baby. They ask your training philosophies and that you need to send photos of your home and your backyard and all of these things, which, okay, I understand you want to place the dog in the right spot so that the dog does not get returned. Like all of that is really important. So that has made me nervous because I filled out, I think, 3 or 4 applications and a couple of them, well, one we missed out. The dog was adopted by someone else. Another, they're too overbearing. I mean, what they're asking of us is total insanity. Again, I appreciate that they want the dogs to be rehomed in a good spot so that they don't have to take them back again at some point, but it's too much. I can't. I feel like it's very invasive, actually. So there are two. They contact your vet. They ask for personal references, Pete. Again, I feel like this is probably what we would go through if we were attempting to adopt a baby.
Right.
This and much more.
Right.
Site visits, home visits, all that kind of stuff. Well, I've gone through this process now multiple times and it'd been narrowed down to a couple of dogs who have some differences. They're both Australian Shepherd mixes, which is what I was looking for. I actually don't know what they're mixed with because each of them is a rescue. One of them is a 10-month-old, so a puppy with a lot of crazy energy, maybe crossed with a border collie because she's smaller. Now, we have a 25-pound mini Aussie. That's my husband's dog who has adopted me as mama. Oh, dear. That dog loves me, which is good. I'm glad. She is in for the shock of her life when we bring another dog in. Anyway, no, she'll be fine. So Daisy's 25 pounds. I love big dogs for a bunch of reasons. I'm just a fan of big dogs. It's not that I dislike Daisy, but that other dog that I told you about, this Aussie mix, she's only about 31 pounds. So we're talking about two relatively small dogs. There are benefits to that, of course. They can fit in the back seat together and nobody's worried about it. But I was really looking more for a bigger dog who's an Aussie mix, but probably crossed with, so Penny was crossed with a golden retriever, so she was 75 pounds, a lab, a golden. So this other dog that I found, I think she might have been crossed with a Dalmatian. She's got some really interesting spots. Her ears are white with black spots on them. I've never seen that on an Aussie before. And while she's was probably a Merle, and they tend to be white as their predominant color, though they'll have rust or, so they call them red and blue Merles, but it's a rust or brown color and then a gray for the blue Merles. Anyway, she's predominantly white. Long tail, a long tail, one of those kinds that a lab has that will knock you over. But she's got the fur and the hair of an Aussie and all the mannerisms of an Aussie. She's almost 80 pounds. So we're talking about a bigger dog, which, again, I love. I'm all about it. But what is really neat about her, so her story, and this melts my heart, she was abandoned in Kentucky. And you may remember what happened earlier this year in Kentucky. They had some astronomical flooding. I mean, just all kinds of issues with water and rain. And they were inundated with flooding all over the place in Kentucky. And not just that, but there have been obviously a lot of challenges in our economy in the last few years. And you think about families that can barely afford to feed themselves. Sometimes, sadly, they abandon their animals. In this case, it's pretty clear that the dog was in a home where she was trained and she was taken care of, but somehow got abandoned, and she was in a kill shelter in Kentucky, because a lot of times in the South, they don't have the facilities. These are small towns that can't keep and house and feed a bunch of animals. So unfortunately, the ones that they end up, I would say collecting, the ones that they end up finding and rescuing, sometimes they're put down because they just can't keep them. Well, in the case of this dog, she's a female. They think she's about a year old. She's so well behaved. She's trained. She was already spayed. She was healthy. She had plenty of food. So they don't know her story, but they know that she was in a home where she was for a while taken care of. And because she was such a good dog, the rescue organization got a call from this kill shelter. Will you please take her? We don't want to put her down. She's too good of a dog. So they've only had her in New Jersey for 10 days. And apparently she fit right in with her foster home. They've tested her with small dogs, with kids, with big dogs, with even a cat that's outdoors. They've taken her to dog parks. They've put her on the leash. They've had her in the house. They've all kinds of different situations so that they can try to write an accurate description of the dog online and then share that with potential adopters. Well, I'm the first one that saw her, which is amazing, and filled out an application. And I spoke to the woman on Monday. She thought I was a good fit. I was so excited. I forgot to ask how much. So my mom texted me later in the evening and said, how much to adopt the dog? And I completely forgot because I was so excited. So they are really excited about me. I'm really excited about the dog and about them. And coming up this weekend, the dog's about an hour away from us in Jersey. We get to take Daisy on, that's our mini Aussie, on a field trip and go meet the new dog. And Pete, this is how it works. If it's okay in that moment, you then take the dog with you.
Oh boy.
And you have a 2-week trial period. So they don't want to put the dog in a situation where it doesn't work, of course. They would rather find a better home, but you get a 2-week essentially foster to adopt program. Again, isn't this a lot like what you might do with a child? Although maybe it would be longer if it was a foster of a kid. But we would bring her home, and if it works out, she would be ours. This did not happen with Penny, by the way. I saw the papers and they said, see ya. Have a great life with your dog.
That's a good way to approach it. That's a very good way to approach it. 2 weeks, get acclimated with what the surroundings. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then on to another home and that type of thing. And I think that's a great way to do it. And it'll be a lot of fun.
So this other little dog, hers is a different story. And I do have a heart for her. In fact, my husband's getting ready to travel at the beginning of December. And he said to me, am I going to come back and we're going to have 2 new dogs? Because I feel so badly this other little dog was adopted as a puppy. The older couple, it's an older couple, older than us. The Aussies have so much energy and they can't take care of her. They don't have a fenced in backyard, and apparently it's wearing them out. But they tried to send her to another foster, and she growled and she barked and she hid. So she's all confused. She doesn't know why she's not with her family, right? And so I want to be able to give her a home too, but this other dog is seemingly the perfect fit. Also, Daisy's a little high anxiety. She's kind of nervous herself, and so we want to bring in a dog that's calm, and this other dog apparently is really chill inside. And I'm just so taken by the fact that her story is so similar to Penny's, how I found Penny, the way that they described Penny when I adopted her. So there's a lot of reasons why I feel like this other dog is the right one. Now, they've given her a name, but they don't know her name. They've had her for 10 days and they had to give her a name. The name they've given her is Millie. We're probably not going to keep Millie, yeah. Although I think that's cute. But
well, yeah, I mean, I would. I think it sounds like a perfect match.
Thank
you. It seems like it. Let's hope.
I want to share a photo, but then I think, what if we don't end up adopting this dog? I don't believe in jinxes. I'm not a superstitious person. I just don't want to put it out there on the internet superhighway. The information superhighway and the social, if it's not going to work out. But I do want to share it because I need to tell someone because I'm excited, but I'm nervous. Seriously, is this what it's going to be like if we try to adopt a baby?
Yeah, just add about 4 years on
I think
that.
I'm going to be sick.
A few years on to that.
Yeah, right. So anyway, we're excited. I'm nervous. My husband's essentially left it up to me because I asked him before we got married, can we be a two-dog home? I knew that Penny probably was in her final few months when we got married. And so to now be on the cusp, Penny's been gone 9 months. I still cry every now and then because I miss her dearly, but to potentially have another dog in the home and one that we can give a great home, right? So it means something to me that she needs a home. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
She's not in a good home where she's fine. We're not stealing her from someone else's home. She needs a home and she needs a family that loves her. So I'm nervous. I'm excited. I know I can't stop like bouncing my leg up and down because I'm nervous talking about
it. You know if it's right.
But that's the good news.
You'll know.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate that. So what do you think? Bad news first, then good news? Is that how it should go?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I feel better now.
Yeah, definitely.
It made me forget a little bit momentarily about the bad news.
See?
All right. See? Fine. You were right.
Thank you.
Write that down. Record it. Anything you need to do because it probably won't come out of my mouth very often.
4:18 Eastern.
4:18 and 39 seconds. All right. I love that you're still suggesting paint guns and BB guns and all types of other nefarious actions for the neighbor's light. My husband is very tempted, as in very. He's got a bow and arrow in our shed because that's how he hunts. And he's so tempted when they're gone one weekend, just be like, whoopsie. But see, the thing is, a BB gun, you wouldn't be able to see. You'd notice that the light went out. But if there's, say, a Ring door camera, the Ring door camera's not going to catch the BB. It's so tiny. I'm getting closer to allowing him. It's just I don't want him to get arrested. Not in his first year in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe wait till year number two.
Right. And wait for this form to go out.
Okay.
Let's try that first.
All right. All right, Pete's talking me down off the wall.
You have to. It's for everybody. It's for your sake and for also the dogs that are going to be there, too.
Thank
you. Don't want any other
issues. Good point.
Any other issues happening.
No, I do not want any other issues happening. All right, distracting myself with talk of a new dog, possibly, trying to stay tempered and not get too excited, but the fact that I am excited means that I'm ready because for months I didn't even want to think about adopting another dog. It just felt all kinds of wrong to me. Dame is back. We'll get to that coming up next. And as I say, Cavaliers and the Celtics on Tuesday will run full court because that'll also distract me from the obnoxious light. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Milwaukee with 16 seconds to work with, down by a point. Can they pull one of these out against a good team? They've lost three of them, Cleveland and Boston, in tight games. Lillard drives inside, scoops to the hoop, lays it in with 3.9 seconds to go. The Bucks have taken a one-point lead, and Damian Lillard some way, somehow, finds that smallest of openings. Van Vliet to send it in. He's got Torian Prince in front of him. Holds it high up. Devers had. Lofts it inside. It was bobbled. Shingun tries to hold on. Out of bounds. Bucks win it. The clock expires. It was going to be a potentially unobstructed layup for Shingun, but the pass went over his head.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Welcome back, Damian Lillard. First time in his career he's ever had a concussion. We're talking about a career that spans 13 years, so that's good news. But after missing three games in concussion protocol, the Bucks needed him on the court. They edge Houston by a point after he makes what is the game-winning layup with just 4 seconds remaining on the clock. And then you hear the call there on Bucks radio. The almost said the Texans. Haha. The Houston Rockets turn the ball over in the end and don't have a quality shot to try to get back at those Bucks. But yes, to have him on the court is a big deal. You've got a veteran player. You've got a point guard. We've heard Doc Rivers talk about not having his point guard on the court. But for Dame, it's a process. It's been a process since he left Portland and got to Milwaukee. The idea behind this season is to find a better rhythm, to find a better chemistry, just better options with he and with Giannis and some of the other stars that were already there. And this may be a bit of a setback, but there's obviously a long way to go.
Being aggressive and attacking and shots not falling, and but the game is still close. And I know that what's expected of me on the team is not to necessarily make a big shot or to, you know, be the guy doing it, but I got to be in attack mode.
Well, Dame just has great courage, you know. Reminds me a lot of Ray Allen in that way. Like, Ray didn't have a lot of bad shooting nights, but when he had one, if you had one shot to make, you still wanted to go to him.
How about that? Doc Rivers comparing Ray Allen, who's a champion a couple times, with Damian Lillard and the mentality. And yeah, Lillard was hit or miss, both literally and figuratively, in his return to the court. He missed all of his shots from beyond the arc. That won't remain the case. I mean, Dame can shoot. He hasn't forgotten how to shoot. Just looking for that rhythm. So it's good news that he's back, and the Bucks are able to end the win streak for the Rockets. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. While we're talking about the Western Conference with the Rockets, well, it was the Clippers and the Golden State Warriors. Golden State pulled itself out of a fairly deep hole earlier in the game, got into a big deficit, turned the ball over way too many times, but still fighting for the finish right there in the end, going toe-to-toe with the Clippers.
James, one-on-one with Heal. Dribbles down the left alley, finds Norm, straightaway three, buckets! Norman Powell gives the Clippers a 10-point lead. Timeout, Steve Kerr. 2:28 to go in the fourth. We'll keep it here. The fifth three for Norm. Curry, a three right corner, off the back rim. Rebound, volleyball out of bounds. Green saves it. It's batted to Wiggins. Right corner, Green. 5 seconds left. Curry, left wing with three. Straight away, Payton, a three for the tie. Off the back rim, and the Clippers survive. The Warriors, a couple looks at it late, and the Clippers on the second night of a back-to-back take down the one seed in the West.
The call on the Clippers radio network. Yeah, that final sequence that you hear took about 25 seconds off the game clock. Curry had a pretty good look. Couple of offensive rebounds. Ball ends up in the hands of Gary Payton. He also missed a final shot at the rim. And the Clippers, who were on the second night of a back-to-back, maybe lost a bunch of energy and had tired legs at the end of this game, so the Warriors were able to rally. They only led the very beginning of this one, but were able to reel in the Clippers, just couldn't quite close them out. So James Harden, dozen points, 16 assists for L.A., first victory at their new arena. So they dropped their first four games at the new digs. I actually don't know the name of the new arena. What is it, producer Pete? Do you know? Sometimes I'm afraid to say anything because I generally go with the wrong names for these things.
Isn't it Intuit?
Is it? We're
like
into it.
That sounds.
We're into
right.
It as Clippers fans.
I will check. I'm going to go with Intuit.
Okay. We're just. Pick a name. Pick any name. It'll change in a couple of years.
Toilets!
Good for Steve Ballmer, though, because he's managed to give the Clippers their own home, which is huge. The Clippers are able to hold the Warriors under 100 points, which is a big deal. And James Harden recognizing that that's one major piece of the Clippers being successful. Can they play defense and can they keep opponents from triple digits?
I mean, that's very, very difficult nowadays. I mean, for us, if we can hold teams under 100 points, we got a really, really good chance of winning a game. So tonight was a good example of it.
It does say we have a lot of grit and a lot of fight to come back and give ourselves a chance, one possession down the stretch. Our defense in the second half was awesome. But two games in a row against the Clippers and once against Cleveland, turnovers dictate the momentum early, and then you kind of leave yourself at the whim of, you know, makes or misses down the stretch to try to get over the humps.
The Warriors are still one of the top teams in the West, though this was not a great game for them. I like that he mentioned the Cavaliers, and Steph started out slow, but mentioning the Cavaliers and the fact that you are going toe-to-toe now with some of the best. So for the Warriors in that game against Cleveland, that was one in which Golden State let them score 136 points. That was huge. Now that was win number 10 of the season for Cleveland. So now they're at 15-0 with by far their biggest test on the road in Boston. It's a nationally televised game, begins at 7 o'clock Boston and Cleveland time on Tuesday. Yeah, we'll see if the Cleveland Cavaliers can get off to a 16-0 start. And I love what we've seen so far from the leadership of Kenny Atkinson. Now, there's a tie there, of course, because he was most recently on the Golden State bench. But this is the defending NBA champions and a team that they'll have to contend with if they want to win the East.
It's great for the NBA, right? I think everybody's going to be watching, and I know our guys are anxious. I know they remember last year, and we're going well. They're going well. Boston Garden. I mean, what's better than that? I mean, this is
nothing.
Just great for the league, great for our franchise. We're excited about it.
I do love the credibility that he brings, and it's obvious that they had a lot of the pieces in place, but now they've got the leadership. And of course, it's also great when you get a taste of the postseason. You have an opportunity to use that as part of your foundation, part of your winning culture. But speaking of that, Kenny Atkinson comes from a winning culture in multiple places, but most recently Golden State. He was part of their 22 run that beat the Celtics in the NBA Finals. And Pete, it reminds me a little bit, we talk about the Cavaliers inserting the right leadership, maybe having a bunch of the pieces that make up a winning team, but you need the formula. You need the guy who can put them in the right places to succeed, the guy who can help them to facilitate that chemistry, and of course, an offensive system that brings out the best in each of these guys. Well, we were talking about the Chargers last hour. It actually reminds me a little bit of what Jim Harbaugh has done. Now, they've got a bunch of changes. They've got some new personnel on offense, but a lot of the veterans on the defensive side of the ball, which is where he starts, right? Jim Harbaugh remakes a defense when he shows up. These are guys who have been stars individually, but needed someone to come in and put it all together. The framework has been there, but they were missing the leadership. They were missing the voice. They were missing the system that would get the best out of them. So these are two great examples of how a coach can make a massive difference right off the top.
And you miss that. And some teams miss that edge. And like, he comes in there with a little chip and a little edge. You know, his first go around as a head coach, he wants to prove himself that it was more on the organization that let him go than himself, which I believe is the case. So,
are we talking about Jim or Kenny?
Kenny,
okay. Because you could say the same thing about Jim.
You could say the same. Well, that, I mean, look at the person that let him go, and look what's happening with him now in Jacksonville. All right, so yeah, definitely. I think it's a good combination, a good mix. The Cavs, who need to get to that next level, and Kenny Atkinson, who wants to get to that next level too. So I think it's a perfect combination.
Sometimes it is about your second go around, though, because you become smarter, you become wiser. Yep. And if you are thinking back to San Francisco, where it was a Jim Harbaugh, who is a strong personality, And Trent Baalke, I often describe it this way. It was a peeing on the fire hydrant contest. There was a lot of friction between these two alpha males. Baalke wanted to do it his way. Harbaugh felt like he had a better way. And essentially the Niners went with Baalke. They decided to stick with Baalke. It obviously didn't work. His last year there, he felt kind of handcuffed, if you will, and the team was 8-8. They didn't have a quarterback at that point. It was kind of the end of Colin Kaepernick there, though he was there for the first year of Kyle Shanahan. But they didn't have the right quarterback, and it was just a mess between the coaching staff and the front office. So Baalke wins the power trip. He wins the power struggle, and you end up seeing Harbaugh go off to Michigan. But he always wanted to get back into the NFL, and now he's got the support of the front office and the ownership. Atkinson, he got caught in what was a mess in Brooklyn, but landed in the right place and now has learned even more so how to lead a franchise. And out of the gate, you couldn't ask for much more with Cleveland.
Yeah, for sure. He's the right person at the right time. And it's going to, I think it's going to, this run, they'll eventually, you know, they're not going to win all these games.
You don't think they're going to go 82-0?
No, the odds are stacked against that. But, you're going to at least, after this, you're going to get them rolling again because they have the chemistry and the formula together. I feel like this is going to be a great combination for them and a big year for the Cavs.
The Cavs are still perfect against the East, so they've gone 12-0 against opponents in their own conference, fourth in the league in scoring. A big piece of this is Evan Mobley in the paint, but obviously you look at Donovan Mitchell and his numbers, averaging nearly 25 points per game, 4 assists. Jason Tatum, well, we know what he can do, averaging just shy of 30 points and is shooting better than 46% right now. So whether or not he wants to admit that he's more motivated or he's as motivated after the summer that he had with the Olympic team, he is torching the Nets right now. So it's Celtics and it's Cavaliers, and that'll be, of course, our top story when we get back to you on Tuesday night. All right, your candidates for Touchdown Tuesday and TD of the Week are straight ahead. At A-Law Radio, at Amy After Hours, that's where all of our polls come from. I did put the post up on our Facebook page because we're through week 11 now, and we can see the writing on the wall in many places. Which coaches are perched precariously on the hot seat? Where do you see changes in the next few months in the NFL? 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, and Texans had their way with the Cowboys with their defense, putting the game on ice.
Rush in the gun. Through the air, 22 of 40. Drops back. Hit from behind. Ball joint free. But then it was picked up, and then it was knocked free again by Petrie. And then picked up on the play by Barnett, who went from the 20 to the 10 to the 5. Houston has scored on a fumble recovery touchdown by Derek Barnett.
Derek Barnett put things to bed with a 28-yard fumble return for a score as the Texans rocked the Cowboys 34-10. Kevin Harlan to call Westwood 1. Joe Mixon, 109 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns. He had another 44 yards receiving. Cooper Rush, 354 in the air, a touchdown and a pick, but sacked 5 times as Houston is now 7-4. Dallas fell to 3-7. Giants have ended the Daniel Jones era, benching the former first-round pick in favor of Tommy DeVito. But despite the struggles for Jones, head coach Brian Daboll not laying all the blame of their 2-8 record at Jones's feet.
That's on everybody. That's just not on Daniel. That's on me. That's on an entire offensive performance.
Elsewhere, 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy said to be day-to-day that due to right shoulder soreness. Checking the NBA where the Bucks upended the Rockets 101-100 on a Damian Lillard drive with 3.9 remaining. Lillard finished with 18 points and 10 assists. Clippers took out the Warriors 102-99. Heat rolled the Sixers 106-89 as Jimmy Butler had 30 points and 10 rebounds. Knicks dominate the Wizards 134-106. Jalen Brunson 26 points, 11 dimes. Magic topped the Suns 109-99. Hawks edged the Kings 109-108. Raptors overpowered the Pacers Pacers 130-119 as R.J. Barrett poured in 39, and the Bulls finished off the Pistons 122-112. College hoops, Gonzaga buried San Diego State 80-67. Auburn thumped North Alabama 102-69. Iowa State drubbed IU Indianapolis 87-52. Wisconsin upended UT Rio Grande Valley 87-84. And Arkansas, no problems with Pacific, 91-72. And Rookie of the Year is announced in the bigs. It goes to a pair of pitchers. Paul Skeens of the Pirates take home the NL Award. Yankees' Luis Gil, he got awarded in the American League. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon.
One man to beat 10. He's gone. They throw in the end zone. Touchdown. Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown. Southern Salting into the end zone.
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Detroit Lions.
On second down, Goff takes the direct snap, fakes the give, sets in the pocket, steps up, looks, throws, it is complete.
There goes J-Mo right side. He's got the angle to the end zone. 25-20, 15-10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. J-Mo flies into the end zone, and the Lions extend their lead. Once he catches that ball, once he's got the angle, you're dead and you don't even know it. J-Mo on his way to the end zone, and the Lions now sitting on 34 points. They open the second half with a J-Mo bolt of lightning.
The Tennessee Titans.
Levis from his end zone, firing deep downfield for Westbrook. Akine's got it! 40, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, 5, end zone! Touchdown, Titans! The longest touchdown pass of the year in the National Football League just went 98 yards.
The Seattle Seahawks.
Geno gets him back to the line of scrimmage, 22-21, gets the snap, looks, steps up, gonna run, 10-5, Geno, touchdown, Seahawks! Holy catfish, Geno Smith! Runs left side, can't find anybody open from 13 out, 12 seconds left, and the Seahawks take the lead, 19-17. Are you kidding me?
The Buffalo Bills.
Allen going to step up in the pocket, now he's going to take it and run, and he's got the first down and more, 10-5, and muscles his way into the end zone for an unbelievable 26-yard touchdown run. Are you kidding me?
Wow, it's hard to narrow it down. We're even leaving out the J.K. Dobbins touchdown that was the game winner for the Chargers on Sunday night because I don't know what you eliminate. It's a great list, and the poll is already up at Amy After Hours. Producer Pete has given you the four options. I'll throw them up on Facebook as soon as I have the opportunity. But as we roll into a Touchdown Tuesday, what is the After Hours TD of the week? Dan Miller with the call of Jameson Williams, the bolt of lightning. I like how he said it. Part of the offensive onslaught for the Lions in what was yet another bloodbath against a team that cannot hold a candle to the Lions offense right now. And so love that one. But it's maybe hard to single out one touchdown when they had 52 points. We've got the Geno Smith game winner with 12 seconds to go. Steve Rabel on Seahawks radio, a stunner again against the Niners who can't hold a lead in the NFC West. The longest touchdown pass of the year. Of course we have to leave it in there. To Nick Westbrook, Akine from Will Levis. At least there's a highlight there for the Titans. That one on the Titans radio network, Mike Keith, and then Chris Brown on Bills radio, Josh Allen's 26-yard touchdown run, and it was terrific. Bouncing off defenders, taking a hit, almost like a pinball, moving the other direction, could not get him down. you could hit him. You could grasp for him. You could reach for him, even get a hand on him, but you weren't getting him down shy of the end zone. So those are your candidates for TD of the week. Again, multiple game winners, which is a lot of fun when we've got a weekend like that in the NFL. We're asking you, in addition to your votes for TD of the week, time for a heat check through week 11 in the NFL. Which head coaches are perched precariously on the hot seat? Where do you see changes in the next few months? Now, I'd like you to be reasonable, but I understand as football fans, we're not logical and rational most of the cases. I've seen all kinds of interesting answers. It's clear that many of you believe Kevin Stefanski is on the hot seat. A bunch of you actually think that Todd Bowles could end up being fired in Tampa. I don't think that's the case. That's just me. I feel like he is safe. They play hard for him. They've also had some brutal injuries, but it's not as though he's lost the locker room or anyone's questioning his leadership or his ability to coach. Gerard Mayo is another one. Christopher posted this on Facebook that I think is ridiculous. How do you fire Gerard Mayo when you've only given him the job for a couple of months and they've got a rookie quarterback that they're working in, not to mention a roster that doesn't have all the talent that he needs to be a winner? So I think that's ridiculous as well. Let's not get crazy. Let's try to be reasonable. Mike McCarthy seems to be a fairly reasonable choice if you're looking at coaches that could end up losing their jobs. Not because his former mansion is on sale. He's actually got another place to live in the Dallas area. But because the Cowboys they're a mess. And the body language and the facial expressions. And where is the hope or this idea that we're going to stick together and we're going to figure out a way through this adversity? It just doesn't seem to be there. But Jerry Jones continues to answer the question, because it keeps getting posed to him, whether or not he'd make an in-season coaching change.
Well, I have made a change, and I've made a change early and on a coach with Chan Gailey, and I've always regretted that. And I've made a change during the season, and I've regretted that. And so that's the music I'm listening to.
Says he has regrets about making that type of a move in the past. Doesn't sound like he's budged off his stance that he will not be making a change in season. But has he budged off his original idea, I guess going back to earlier in the season, that all the people in the building still have his confidence and he believes that the people in the building are the ones to lead them forward? Was asked again whether or not Mike McCarthy has lost the Cowboys locker room.
Well, it's not as though that lost the locker room. I remember John Madden and Al Davis called me after we won one game the very first year, and he said, well, at least you didn't lose the team or the locker room. I said, well, what's that? How do you lose a team? You misplace them on the road or what? And I'm not trying to be cute here, but they say, well, you didn't lose it. Well, I can tell you in there right now with the kind of careers a bunch of those guys have, kind of the prospects of their futures, the competitors they are, I don't worry one ounce about losing anything as far as in the family of losing a team.
I don't actually know if he answered the question. Do you? Did he answer the question?
Worked around it.
I kind of got lost in, I don't, trying to figure out what the heck he was talking about.
He didn't say, he basically said he didn't know what that means.
Right. So I don't know what he means. Okay. So the answer, in other words, is
maybe.
No. Yes. Maybe so. Remember when you were a kid? Okay, maybe you never did this, but I had boys in my elementary school classes send me a note. Will you go out with me? Circle yes, circle no. I would always write maybe and circle that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.